Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. This is Anita Bruzis. Welcome to Smash the Ladder with Anita and Diane. This morning we have a wonderful guest for you. His name is Bill Lampton. I've known Bill for probably 15 years, and he's one of those people that I just think he's such a terrific communications expert that when I was looking into doing a segment for this morning, I really felt like he was my go-to guy. Good morning, Bill.
Good morning, Anita. Thanks for those good words, and it's wonderful to be a part of Smash That Traditional Career Ladder. I've done that myself a time or two, and I know it's necessary today.
Well, you know, with the news out of Wall Street, I think a lot of people are looking for ways to better manage their own career and not rely on any one employer. So I think today's communications that lessons that we have will translate into all areas of their lives.
Yes, and you're right. You can't be complacent about your job today. If you ever could, you certainly can't now.
Yes, exactly. I wanted to begin with some general things. You know, you have written books on communications, The Complete Communicator, and you run your own business, and you're a PhD in communications. And I've known you for, you know, 15 years, and I've used you in both my books and several columns. So I think you have a lot of really good practical advice to impart. So we'll get started. What do you think are some of the greatest communication challenges in the workplace today?
There are two or three that come to mind immediately, Anita. One of them is, and I will preface this by saying that I was in management myself for 23 years, and in fact, that's why I wrote my book, which you've mentioned, The Complete Communicator, Change Your Communication, Change Your Life, because I wanted to help people avoid many of the mistakes that I had seen in communication and many of them that I committed myself, and also to share with people some very positive ways to become a powerful communicator. The first one that I would mention would be that there's a widespread failure to understand that all of us operate with different communication styles. And therefore, one of the mistakes that I made as a manager, and I think many other managers do, is to try to assume that everyone prefers your communication style. And therefore, if they don't, you want to try to change them so they will. Well, Anita, that makes about as much sense as saying, I'm going to change this person's way of communicating after we get married.
Mm-hmm. We know how well that will work.
That's right. If you've ever tried that, that's a pertinent illustration. Let me mention, for example, that in my own communication style, traditionally over the years, I'm a rather light, jovial, informal, highly personal worker, manager. And in the workplace, if a person was very detail-oriented, if they were very matter-of-fact, if they were stick-to-the-point, if they were totally task-oriented, not very people-oriented, I couldn't understand that.
Mm-hmm.
I felt that they were cold and they were indifferent. Fortunately for me, later in my management career, I discovered what's called the DISC personal style analysis. It's a DISC, D-I-S-C, is an acronym, and it stands for the four predominant communication styles. D is dominant.
Okay.
I is imaginative. And by the way, the D, the dominant, would be the CEO, the person who says, I don't want excuses. I want results. I don't want this done yesterday. I want it done yesterday. The imaginative person, the I, is the person who's the cheerleader for the group, the one who probably tells jokes at staff meetings, and the one who wants to organize the staff parties. The S is the steadiness person. This is the good team player, the person who's very loyal to the organization. The C is the compliant person. This is the rule book Rudolph of the organization. This is the one where, Anita, if you were to say, well, let's try something new, and they'll say, oh, no, can't work here. Never done that before, not in our bylaws,
right,
not in our budget. Well, what I eventually learned once I looked into this system and I went through it myself was that an organization really needs all of these types. We need that dominant, driving person to get things done. We need the imaginative person to keep the morale going. We need the steadiness person for teamwork. And we need the compliant person to keep us on track when we're too far off base. So one of the things I advise on this is find out your communication style, and there are a lot of ways that you can do that. I work through Target Training International, and I administer this to clients. But there are a lot of ways that you can do it, several companies that offer that. Find out your communication style. Learn how to identify the communication styles of others.
Mm-hmm.
And then learn how to adjust your communication style so that you're most effective with them.
Right. So really what you're doing is you're learning to appreciate what everybody brings to the table instead of criticizing them for the way that they communicate. You learn to appreciate them and quit basically butting your head against a wall.
And it is a wall, and that wall is not going to change, and it's folly to think that it's going to change. One of the illustrations I use is that if you go to a football game and everyone is waiting for the teams come out on the field, and all of the players are wearing number 7, and they're all throwing passes. They all want to be quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't just have a quarterback. You've got to have
the
tackles. You've got to have the defensive backs. You've got to have the receivers. So it is important that all of us recognize that everybody does have a role to play. It takes some patience and understanding to work with those with different communication styles. But we need to remember, hey, they're having to have patience and understanding with us as well.
Right. Let me just pause right here and say if anybody wants to call in, they have any questions or comments, the number is 347-326-9987. I want to move on to a next question. What role does technology play in all this? Are we using it in the right way? Are we actually, as some people claim, making things worse with email and BlackBerries and instant messaging and that kind of thing?
A good place for me to start here, Anita, is to say that I was one who entered the technology age myself. I was dragged into it kicking and screaming.
Okay.
And if that helps some listeners to know that,
I
think it possibly could. And when I was in management and email started coming in and computers started coming in a big way, I did not consider myself technically oriented, and so I did what many managers do when they're afraid of something. I assigned it to somebody else. I delegated it. But eventually, 11 years ago, when I set up my own company, there was nobody else to delegate to.
Right.
And so if I wanted a website, if I wanted to know how to communicate with email, if I wanted to know even something as simple as fax, I had to learn those things myself.
Mm-hmm.
So I come at it from the standpoint that many people do of being forced to learn it. However, mm-hmm. I am now a very strong advocate for technology. To answer your question, I would say to begin with that one of the things that we could make a mistake on is putting too much faith in technology to solve our communication problems. In fact, I like to tell my seminar and speech audiences that the computer doesn't necessarily solve our problems. The computer simply allows us to make our mistakes faster and more people will see them.
The written word can come back to haunt you.
That's right, thousands of times.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a magic solution to our problems. And you mentioned email. Well, we've all made a lot of email mistakes. We send an email to someone, and unfortunately, we send it to the wrong person.
Mm-hmm.
We say we're going to include an attachment, but we don't. We include a link, and the link is outdated.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the real difficulties with email is, and I feared this when I saw email coming into the corporation that I was working with at the time, is that email often is it becomes a substitute for real face-to-face communication.
Now, see, that's one thing I hear quite a bit of, people saying that it's actually interfered with some creative processes and has actually led to situations being blown out of proportion because you can't see the look on someone's face, you can't see if they're joking, you can't see if they're trying to be, you know, sarcastic with you and just be funny through the situation. You might take it seriously in an email.
All those nonverbal cues which we have when we're in a face-to-face conversation, and then there's just something highly impersonal about emailing the person who's sitting in the cubicle 7 feet away from you.
Right.
You're aware, I'm sure, Anita, as many of your listeners are, that some companies have even put the quietus on email. Maybe they say there will be no email in this in this workplace on Friday morning. If
right.
you have something to say to somebody, go to them
mm-hmm.
so that we don't let it substitute entirely. Now, switching to the more positive side, we have many communication advantages from technology. For one thing, how magnificent it is that a company, even a company with a moderate budget, can have a worldwide billboard mm-hmm. with a website.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very different from the old days when we would spend $5,000 for our brochure, and then the next thing we knew, we dropped a service, or we added a service, or we changed our phone number or our mailing address, and we had to spend another $5,000.
Right.
Now it's so simple. It's so easy for us with our website. Another trend is companies having their own blog. And
right.
Blog, as you and our listeners know, stands for web log. And many companies have found that instead of just communicating with their employees with an annual report, are the old-style memos or even email memos, why not have a company blog where the company on almost a daily basis can keep people updated and even more importantly than that, get employee feedback and suggestions,
mm-hmm.
recommendations.
Well, let's switch to some of the more prickly communication problems we have in the workplace. Let's talk about, I know that you've talked about in the past, about one of the greatest frustrations is getting somebody to return your phone call. Do you have some tips on getting people to respond to you? Because I even have this problem, and I'm a reporter, and they should be returning my phone calls, but sometimes they don't. Do you have any tips for the listeners today?
There are a few, yes. Number one, always, if you have the opportunity to have someone refer you to the person that you're calling, always begin the conversation with that person's name, not with your own. For example, I wouldn't call someone and say, "Hi, this is Bill Lampton," because that name doesn't mean anything to them
mm-hmm.
if I have had Anita Braziz refer me. So instead, when they answer the phone, I say, "Hi, Anita Braziz suggested that I call you."
Okay.
Well, you see, I have no credibility with the person to begin with, but
okay.
you do.
Okay.
So even if I leave that as a voicemail, that person is going to call me back, not as a favor to me necessarily, but because they have a they respect you professionally. Another one is when you want someone to call you back, certainly make certain that you leave your number clearly and plainly and slowly. Leave it twice. Leave it at the first. Sometimes people are writing it down when they first get their message. Again, leave it at the end of the message.
I love that suggestion. I don't know how many times people have rattled off phone numbers, and I can't understand them, especially if they're calling from a mobile line where they're moving around and maybe the reception is really bad. There's been several phone calls I've not returned because I can't understand what they're saying.
Yes, and if that mobile line breaks up, which,
right.
Which they can do. Something else I would say about getting your phone calls returned is let the person know, if you're leaving a voicemail, let the person know that there's a direct benefit if they return the call to you. You know, we all operate over that favorite radio station we all have, WIFM, what's
yeah.
in for me. Okay, state a benefit. If you return my call, or when you return my call, I'll give you three ways to simplify your department's budget preparation.
Okay.
Hey, okay, there's good reason for me to return the call.
Okay.
And then one other tip I would give on this is be short-winded with your message. If if you leave a message that's 5 minutes long, the person's
mm-hmm.
going to immediately say, "Gee, I don't want to talk to somebody who's that verbose. I don't have time to talk to them." Leave a very succinct message.
Well, and don't you think it's a good idea also to kind of rehearse what you're going to say before you call? Because I don't know how many times I've gotten messages okay, wait a second. What was I saying here? And you can hear the computer keys clacking, and you know they're doing two or three other things.
Mm-hmm.
And they have the enthusiasm of, you know, a death sentence. I've had people call, and it just is so long, and it's so rambling, and they sound so depressed and defeated. I'm like, gee, I really don't want to talk to this person today. They call pass.
You're right on target there, and I put it this way, sound like you have a pulse.
Yeah. I had someone say to me one time, "Stand up."
Mm-hmm.
When you leave a message, it just puts more energy into your voice, and I think that's true. Sometimes, you know, it's a long afternoon. If you stand up, you kind of it's like getting yourself ready. One of the other another subject I wanted to talk to you about is, you know, we have a lot of interruptions at work these days, and I've had several people mention to me that one of the most troublesome things is the coworker who continually drops by. Hi, how you doing? What are you working on? What's going on? Da, 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 da. And people are so pressed for time. They're wanting to get out of work. They're wanting to get those emails done. They're wanting to get the project done. What would be a good way to communicate to someone politely so that, you know, you don't cause problems, an argument, to kind of get rid of these people that continually interrupt you?
It's a widespread, pervasive problem, and you're exactly right in saying you want to get the message across to the person that you don't have time to talk, and yet you don't want to shatter a relationship. It's interesting, Anita, that probably 3 or 4 years ago, I wrote an article about this for my newsletter. I have a monthly email newsletter, which I hope listeners will subscribe to by going to my website and signing up for it. And the article I wrote was titled, Muzzling the Workplace Motor Mouth. I also call them workplace windbags.
Uh-huh.
That article drew, I'm sure you often measure what you write in
right.
your publications about
mm-hmm.
by reader response. That article drew more response and more people thanking me for it and more people telling me how they suffered from the problem and how they solved it. It's a very, I call it the listener's ultimate challenge. Okay, here's some tips that I give. If the worker walks up, and this is someone you know fits into that workplace windbag category,
mm-hmm.
just keep doing what you're doing. Don't look up. Talk to them. Answer their questions politely, but briefly. If they don't get the message from that, check your watch. Even a slightly observant person gets a message from that. Maybe even getting back to the being polite with them, tell them why you can't talk. Well, you know, Jeff, I really wish that I had time to chat with you, but I'm fighting a tight deadline on that budget. It's due at noon, so I'll have to check with you later on.
Okay.
Then even some more nonverbal signals that we can give. Start packing your briefcase
mm-hmm.
as though you're leaving. And if all else fails, get up and say, let's finish this on the way out.
Yeah.
Walk them out of your office.
I also think that some people need to realize that they create a too inviting environment for people to stop in. I advise people, don't keep the candy dish on your desk. Turn your chair away from where you're facing people as they're walking by. I mean, if you have to put a plant up or something to kind of block your line of vision so that they can't easily see you. And one of the things that I had somebody else suggest to me was, you know, pick up the phone and say, you know what, I'm scheduled for a phone conference. I'm going to have to get back to you.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there are ways. It's difficult. I think sometimes these people just get into a bad habit. And if you kind of can redirect them like you would a toddler that won't leave something alone, you know, you just redirect their attention, sometimes they'll move on, unfortunately, to your neighbor who will then have to put up with it. But you know, with all of us pressed for time, it's just a stress that we just don't need to take on.
And 2 minutes here and 3 minutes there and 5 minutes there in conversations, and next thing you know, you've lost track of what you're trying to accomplish.
Oh, you know, that looking for that critical thinking time where you can have a stretch of time where you're actually, you know, thinking a problem through from beginning to end, and if you're constantly interrupted, you know, it may be 2 minutes of time, but it may be 30 minutes worth of work that you have to go back and regroup and redo that you might have had done. I think that thought will spur people into moving these folks along. One of the things that you and I have also talked about many times is the art of listening. People, if you ask somebody if they're a good listener, I think most of us will say yes. But I don't know how many times, for example, my spouse has said to me, well, you didn't tell me that. I'll say, yes, I did. I stood right there and told you that. And I know that people have that problem in meetings and at the workplace. They'll say, well, you know, I told you that was due at such and such. And they'll say, no, you didn't. Well, yes, I did. And then they're off on that tangent where they're so busy focusing placing the blame, they're not fixing the problem. And the problem is that we could all benefit from becoming better listeners, right?
Very much so.
Okay, so one of the things that you have told me before is that we're so busy thinking about what we're going to say in response to someone that we forget to stop and actually listen to what they're saying.
That's so true. In fact, one of the tips that I like to give people is on how to catch and remember names. And in fact, anybody who signs up for my newsletter, they get a brief video that I've done on that, on how to remember names. My first point on that is you can't remember a name unless you catch it.
Mm-hmm.
You're exactly on base, Anita, when you say that our main problem is in listening. We're not listening. We're thinking of what we're going to say. And so when we're introduced to someone in a social or a business setting and we're looking at them, our main thought is, what's my first brilliant statement that I'm going to make to impress this person?
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that their name was Ned Evans or whatever just goes right by us.
Mm-hmm.
So the very first thing to do is to make sure that you catch the name. And if you don't catch it, ask them to repeat it. They won't mind. They'll be complimented that you do.
I have found that saying to somebody, you know, they'll say, "Hi, I'm Mary." And I'll say, "Mary, is that right?" It's so much easier to do that then than it is 2 days later at the conference, same conference, and you say to this person, "Now, what was your name again?" It's so much less embarrassing in the first conversation, even at the end of it, say, "No, wait a minute, I have this right, Mary, right?" And the more times I say it, the easier it is for me to remember.
That's right. Repeat the name immediately once you've been introduced to somebody, and use it two or three times in the conversation. Not only, Anita, is it very embarrassing, 2 days later it's even more embarrassing.
Yes.
If somebody walks up 2 minutes later and you've met this person, and you then have the responsibility of introducing them, and you're stammering all over the place because you can't remember their names. I had a most interesting thing happen about a dozen years ago when I was speaking to a group in Atlanta. I wanted very much to get across to the group how important listening is. So the title of my talk was "Listen Your Way to the Top."
Uh-huh.
And my program host has called me and said, "What's your title?" And I said, "Listening Your Way to the Top." She said, "Oh, that just sounds great." She said, "I want to put that in the program." So I get there, and you and your listeners may can guess the rest of it. My title was printed, "Speak Your Way to the Top." And so I said to my hostess, I pulled her aside, and I said, "I don't want to embarrass you, but could I please use this as an illustration of how we automatically assume that you speak your way to the top?" And she was very gracious about it. She allowed me to do that. The people got the point then, and I said, "No, you really don't speak your way to the top. You listen your way to the top." I often say that if someone were to come to me early in their career and say, "I want to be a terrific success in business and professional life, and I have two choices. One is to become an outstanding presenter, a speaker, or the other one is to be a very good listener." Always, I would say, "I will work with you on how to become an excellent listener." We
mm-hmm.
have many speakers around. We train people for speaking.
Mm-hmm.
We don't train people very often or very well for listening. And the person who is an excellent listener, who not only remembers names but remembers those instructions they were given, who remembers what was said in meetings, who remembers incidents in the company's life, that person is going to be very, very valuable because they have a skill that's quite rare.
Well, I think that all of us, I mean, I can name on probably one hand the people that I have met and talked to that they made such an impression on me because they focused on me like a laser beam, like
mm-hmm.
I was the most important person in the world, and what I was saying was that's all they had to do right then. And I can remember those people specifically, and I think that if everyone thought of that and thought, you know what, I want to be that person, that makes you as memorable as anything you'll say is the way that you listen to somebody. You will really stick out in that person's mind.
You remind me of a story that Dale Carnegie tells in his book about how to win friends and influence people. When he was very, very first starting his career, he was invited to a cocktail party. He didn't know anybody there at all, and his hostess said, "Mr. Carney, this will be a good way for you to meet some of the important people in the area." He went to the cocktail party, and all evening long, all he did was just ask people questions when he would meet them. What do you do for a living? What's your background on that? Who are your customers? Tell me more about your service. Where are you from originally, and so on. The next day, the hostess called Dale Carnegie and said, "People told me that you're the most fascinating person that's ever spoken with them." "What did you do, Mr. Carnegie?" He realized then that he had hit on something very essential, and that's a part of Dale Carnegie training. It's a part of Stephen Covey's training. Stephen Covey talks about this a great deal. He calls it the most effective communication skill that a person can have is being able to listen, and as he puts it, listen empathically, not only for the words but for the meanings between them.
Right. You had given me several other tips about listening. I'm just going to give a couple of them because we've got like 4 minutes left. One of them was finishing someone's sentence, you know, saying, "I know exactly what you mean," and you jump in. I can top that. You know, somebody's telling you about a trip to the Grand Canyon, but you have to jump in with the story about going to Rome.
One-upsmanship.
Yes. Daydreaming. I like this one. The average rate of speaking is 125 to 150 words a minute, while our listening comprehension is about 400 to 500 words a minute. And you said that listening gap leaves room for our minds to roam. And I think that's especially true in a busy office when there's so many distractions. You know, the phones are ringing. People are, you know, clacking on their keyboards. Somebody's coughing. Somebody's, you know, using the microwave. There's a lot of distractions, so you really have to work on focusing.
Yes, listening. Listening is not really just a passive act. It's something that's very aggressive and active. It's a skill that you continually develop and cultivate.
You know, here's one that gets on my nerves a little bit. Interrupting. I watch because I'm a journalist and I've worked on interviewing people and listening to their answers. One of the bad habits I think people have gotten into is listening to media personalities feel like they have to shout one another down or talk over one another or constantly interrupt one another and that's how people think you're supposed to do, I think. Some people have gotten in the bad habit of interrupting. Talk to me for a few minutes about what the problems are with interrupting when someone is speaking.
Well, I certainly will underscore what you say about the media on this. I read not too long ago, Anita, that I read a comment from a person who screened people who would go as guests on talk shows, and the screener said, "We cannot bring anybody onto a talk show who won't interrupt, because we'll just have people sitting there monologuing. We must have people who interrupt." Okay, look at what role models this has given us.
Right.
Everybody who watches talk shows, everybody's vying for attention. To answer your question, interrupting says to the person we're talking with, "What you're saying is not important. What I'm saying is important. What you're saying isn't interesting. What I'm saying is interesting." In other words, you are in second place and I'm in first place. Probably the most offensive thing you can do in trying to communicate with somebody effectively.
Right. One final thing. A lot of people are going to be out of work and scared they're going to be out of work and looking for jobs and they're going to be networking. What's a good way, if you could give us a tip in like 30 seconds, what's a good way to make a first impression on someone?
One of them you've already identified, and that is make certain that you focus on the other person. Know everything you can about a company if you're going to interview with the company. There were times in the past when we couldn't do that very easily, and now almost any company that you want to interview with has its annual report on its website, perfectly available there for you. Learn as much as you can about the individual or the person that you're going to talk with, and make them the focus of what you're doing. And then some of the standard approaches to make a good first impression still work. For example, dress for success. I had a person one time who was meeting me, and I couldn't decide whether to wear a coat and tie or suit. So I wound up wearing a coat and tie instead of a suit. This was a business luncheon. He shows up in a T-shirt, sandals, and shorts, which was just saying to me, Bill, you're not worth my time.
Well, what I always say is if you can mow the back 40 in it, go clubbing in it, or sleep in it, never wear it to a business situation.
I've got to write that down.
Listen, Bill, I've enjoyed our conversation as always. If anyone wants further information, can you give us your website?
Sure. It's championshipcommunication.com.
Okay. Bill Lampton, once again. Our guest next week that Diane Danielson, my partner, will be interviewing is Lindsay Pollock from Getting from Career to College. She'll be giving lots of good tips. Once again, I've enjoyed having Bill. He's always full of good information. I hope all of you have a good week and tune in with us again next week, Tuesday, for Diane's guest. Thank you.
Thank you.